little something between you and me. Don't cost you nothing, this one's for free.
So, if you're happy for me just to sort of do a little bit of talking, just to sort of introduce the concept, what I want to talk about is focused data gathering initially. Now, I don't talk about history and examination anymore because it suggests a sequence, really, in a consultation where you do the history, then you do the examination, then you move on. And it's an old-fashioned medical model that works well in hospital, but doesn't work so well in general practice. And most of us tend not to follow that sequence when we're consulting. And it's rare now that I show trainees videos of me consulting because it looks very chaotic until about 8 minutes when things start to come together again, when you begin to sort of pull it all together. And there's a tension there really in teaching and assessment because, like all skills, you've got to get a trainee to work through the process. So whether you're learning teaching them how to ski or do anything else, I've got to go through the basics and learn how to do it before we can start to experiment a little bit. And consulting is similar. And so the chart that you've seen before that I adapted from one of the Bradford things years ago is something that seems to have been quite popular just because it tells people what should be happening or gives people a structure on which to work. The key thing really about this, and my ongoing disclaimer, is that this shouldn't be a rigid model that people follow. It should be something that is useful for trainees to look at, to see what they should be doing, maybe at certain times of the consultation. It's very useful for trainers to look at. And the timings, particularly the 3 minutes and the 6 to 7 minutes, should really have some arrows on them to say that there's some discrimination there or variability there. Because some of the consultations that we do, you can spend the whole 10 minutes just exploring the patient's ideas and concerns and getting, you know, the reason for attendance. And that doesn't happen in the CSA, but in real life consultations, this can actually be much longer. The 6 to 7 minutes is important really because the majority of trainees who fail the CSA and who can't run 10-minute consultations run into difficulties because they can't get to the management aspect by 6 to 7 minutes. And as a result, in the exam, they fail because they never get to the management plan or the safety net because they're too busy still usually data gathering. Does that make sense? I mean, you'll all see that in SD1s and SD2s, increasingly, unfortunately, in SD3s as well. And that's partly because they get used to having 20-minute or 15-minute appointments. The issue there is that they never get the same gut response that people like me get in a consultation where I think, this is overrunning, I should be somewhere else by this. You feel it physically almost, don't you? And unless you're consulting at 10 minutes or 15 minutes, whatever, you don't get that. And that gives people a false sense of what's happening in the consultation. So it's really important that trainees get a sense of what 10 minutes is. Even if you give them 10 minutes, 10 minutes, and then a 10-minute break, it's much better than having 15 minutes. And so this 6 to 8 minutes is the sort of me coming back from the couch, sitting down and saying, okay, so you know, this is what you've told me, this is what I've found, these are what the options are. From what you've said to me, I suspect that these might be the best options. Let's discuss that, let's share the management thing, let's safety net it, and let's finish the consultation. So that's where this bit is. The problem and the area that causes most difficulty is this bit here, which is data gathering, because the majority of trainees, certainly early on, spend too long data gathering, and all of the trainees who fail the CSA fail because they spend too long in data gathering, basically. And they tend to go on walkabout in the consultation, just exploring different things, and if they really get lost, they just ask about smoking alcohol and then go off onto lecturing patients about that side of things. And so this bit is really the bit that I concentrate on when I'm dealing with people who are struggling with the CSA, and it's certainly an area that I would work on with SD1s. And the interesting bit I find is that I've called this the doctor-centred bit because people think that being patient-centred means that the patient should basically run the consultation and everything should be around the patient. Well, that isn't what we're doing here. We need a patient-centred but doctor sort of led consultation. Otherwise, we're never going to get to the end of it. And this, the doctor-centred bit means that this is where I'll signpost a few things and say, right, I just want to ask you some medical type questions. This is the bit where you say, I need some information, give me that information. And you would start with red flags, because that's obviously important, and then you move on to other bits of information that help. And the key element, really, in consulting is to try and get the information on which you're going to base your decisions. So if you've got somebody who has an alteration in bowel habit, there are only certain things that you need to know that are going to impact on your decision making. You know, weight loss, bleeding, not that many things. You know, there's a few red flags that are important. And you can go through a consultation and hope that the patient's going to give you that information or hope that you're going to remember to ask it. But it's better to say, right, I'm going to ask you a few medical questions. I need some information. Give it to me now, fast. Tell me, have you had this? Have you had any bleeding? Have you had any weight loss? Whatever that might be. And if it's you know, chest problems, it's the lung cancer ones. You know, they're the sorts of red flag questions that you need to know the answers to. And that's closed questioning, and it's signposted. So the patients don't think, why the hell is he suddenly asking me about that? If you just say, oh, just let me ask a few medical questions, give me the answers, and then we'll move on to the more patient-centered bit again type of thing. And focused data gathering needs to be exactly that. It needs to be focused into the information that you need on which to base your decision-making. So if we take something like headache, and you've heard me talk about this, many of you, if you have a 75-year-old man who has a left-sided headache, you're going to think about the differentials in that. First of all, you need to think about the most serious thing that a 75-year-old man might have with regard to headache, and that could be what?
Temporal arthritis.
Yeah, so if he comes in with left-sided pain, you think about temporal arthritis because it's serious. You think about intracerebral problems, whether that might be secondaries. And if it's secondaries, where is that going to come from? Lung, prostate, maybe. You might have a subdural from falling down or whatever. They're probably going to be the most serious things you're going to think about. More likely things in a 75-year-old man. I mean, it could be all sorts of different things. It could be cataracts, his vision's not that good. Could be TMJ dysfunction. Could be
headache.
Could be earwax. He might have lost his wife a few months ago. And he's depressed and getting headaches. There are various things that you would think about. Now, if you're thinking about that, you're thinking about probability. You know, what's the most likely thing or the most serious thing that a 75-year-old with a left-sided headache? If it was a 35-year-old woman with a left-sided headache, the differentials are going to be different. The most serious thing that a 35-year-old woman with a left-sided headache would be primary brain tumour, secondaries from breast cancer, benign endocrine hypertension, what else? Not much more. The more likely things that a 35-year-old woman would get with a headache on one side, migraine, tension headache. I suppose the point I'm making is that the differentials change, don't they?
Yeah.
And the whole reason that we're good at what we do in general practice is because we do it quickly, in 10 minutes or so, don't we? And the way that we do that is by taking risks. And the risks that we do are calculated risks because they're based on pattern recognition and probability. It's most likely to be that. And we'll look for the serious things, but these are the most likely things. If it is that, what pattern do I need to follow to get that?
Let's hear it for our GP. Skills improving, risk removing, no confusing.